Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN in association with Betfred. Nicky Banditti dropping by very shortly to get us up to speed on yet another whirlwind Sunday in the NFL. The Bucs-Chiefs game lived up to the hype. Maybe we shouldn't be counting out those Tampa Bay Buccaneers quite yet. I'll explain why in just a bit. We'll talk about an extraordinary situation in Denver as well. Starting a wide receiver from the practice squad at quarterback against the New Orleans Saints. How on earth was that allowed to happen? That and plenty more stories from Week 12 coming up very, very shortly. Just enough time for me to plug what's coming up later on this week on the show. Don't forget our brand new Edge Rush show. Me and producer Ollie dropping our hot takes on the weekend's action every Saturday morning. That drops into your podcatcher of choice. Before that, we'll have the Week 13 preview. Will Gavin in the house for that one. Looking forward to catching up with him. That one dropping Friday this week. So make sure you've subscribed to us wherever you listen and you won't miss a trick, won't miss an episode all season long. Let's get straight down to business and check in with the brilliant Nicky Banditti. Nicky, good to see you. We're going to start with what we thought was going to be the game of the weekend. I think it kind of lived up to the hype to a degree. And it got me thinking that, and this number astonished me. So you and I were sitting in the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami 10 months ago, believe it or not, 10 months ago. That's a crazy, blow my mind number.
Different lifetime.
It really was. Celebrating the genius of Mahomes. I think I was celebrating the genius of Andy Reid for about 15 minutes. And you said, we got to talk about Mahomes. And, you know, 10 months on, I think he's getting better, isn't he? I mean, I think the more I see him, the better I think he's getting.
He's outrageous. I mean, he's outrageous. Some of the throws, I'm sure we should talk about Tyreek Hill because 203 yards in a first quarter is something, but that's possible because, yes, on those deep routes, the Buccaneers made some questionable decisions in coverage, but when you watch the plays back, you see how Mahomes is looking players off, the way he's leading the safeties with his eyes to one side of the field and then comes back to Hill and finds him in the space to throw that ball. I think he's so natural. That's what's incredible about it. I mean, he's got a great arm. That's not a surprise to anyone. He's a great athlete. That's not a surprise to anyone. We know all these things, but I think what really stands out about him is just that ability to lead defenders, to look away from his intentions, to trust where his teammates are going to be, even when he's not looking at them. And I think that's what separates him as an elite level quarterback.
Yeah, the faking out is getting better. And that kind of makes sense, really. It's the sort of thing that, you know, the more acclimatized he gets to the NFL, though he was acclimatized seemingly from day one to the NFL, but that kind of makes sense, that finesse and that enhancement. And this offense, the retention of the Chiefs full stop as an organization has arguably been their biggest asset. Will Gavin, who's on the show, incidentally, this Friday, we were doing radio last night, and he was saying that was something that was overlooked, really, the fact the Chiefs have kept pretty much everything intact, and that was always going to be key. Mahomes' stat line, 37 completions, 49 attempts, 462 yards, 3 touchdowns. You mentioned Tyreek Hill. That was interesting. The Carlton Davis, and you're being very diplomatic, Nicky, but Carlton Davis is getting shellacked left, right, and center, but they didn't adjust, and that was interesting, whether you can possibly adjust against Tyreek Hill or not. But this is a Tampa D that has been celebrated for much of the season, and the Saints game notwithstanding has pretty much held firm for most of the season, but they seem to be completely outthought in the first half.
Yeah, and I agree with you, the lack of adjustments is what was most surprising to me. I think, yes, maybe I'm being too diplomatic, but I just think, look, how many cornerbacks in the league, if you leave them one-on-one with Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball, how many cornerbacks are really going to win that battle most of the time? Not that many. And the continuity of staff thing, which you mentioned, is huge because it's 2020 and everyone is in a more disrupted state than normal because the staff was already incredible. It's hard to always get Tyreek Hill double covered when you know that if you follow that route over the top, you're going to have Travis Kelce coming and sitting underneath, when you know you're going to have always another target that Mahomes feel comfortable throwing the ball to. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, you're up against a Bruce Arians team, and in many ways it was a Bruce Arians game plan. Just kick the door down right away with long passes. And it was too late by the time the Buccaneers woke up. The Buccaneers actually played really well in the second half.
Right.
But it felt like it was already in a a lost game state. I know the final score looks close, but it never really felt to me like it was ever going to flip in a different direction.
You see, that's interesting. Before we started recording, Ollie, the producer, and I were having this chat, and he said exactly the same thing, Nikki, that at no point did it look like Tampa were ever going to catch him and certainly win the game ultimately.
Which is extra surprising when it's Tom Brady, right? Like with Tom Brady, exactly. You always expect Tom Brady to come up with something.
And the divided opinion on Brady and ultimately how far this Bucks team can go, because we all know that this is very much a generation of recency bias at the moment. And clearly they've been in a slump, and clearly the offense isn't in any kind of rhythm consistently, although I'd argue that they started to find that rhythm in the second half. The deep ball you mentioned, I mean, that was going into this game the most talked about stat, having started the season saying, look, Brady can throw the deep ball, and then, oh no, he can't throw the deep ball, and well, maybe he can throw it, you know. So we're flip-flopping backwards and forwards, but they fought back from a 17 zip hole. They, as I say, looked a lot more together in the literal sense in the second half. Tony Romo was saying, I don't know if you caught this at the end, which I found interesting, when he was saying, we might well be seeing these two teams back here at Raymond James in February. And I said, I really like what I saw from the Bucks in the second half. And it got me thinking, right? So they've got a bye week now. Then their run-in is Minnesota. They've got Atlanta twice and then Detroit. So all very winnable games. Certainly if they pick up 3 out of 4, they're in the playoffs. And they could conceivably end up playing, and most likely end up playing the NFC East winner, right? So it is reasonable to assume this Bucks team are going to be a couple of games away from the Super Bowl before we know it. And I think this discussion about their demise is far too premature.
For sure. I mean, if you want to talk about the continuity of the Chiefs, consider that Antonio Brown has joined in mid-season, and right, perhaps you expect to get increasing returns on him. I did see someone quite uncharitably point out that the Buccaneers, who were flying, are 1-3 since Antonio Brown arrived. I think there's certainly plenty of people looking for a little bit of karma there, perhaps for other things that have happened. But
the wider point there, I guess, is interesting, which is that there are too many mouths to feed. I've heard that argument put across, that, you know, Fournette in the mix as well. That there, and someone made the clear but nevertheless important point that it's almost a diametric opposite to the final years and the final year of Brady in the Patriots. They don't quite know how to use all these weapons, I guess, is the point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry if this is sort of banging a drum that's been banged a lot. I do still have some reservations about whether or not Bruce Arians' offense is the Tom Brady offense.
Right.
The fact is, he has thrown more balls that have traveled 20 yards through the air, more balls that have traveled 30 yards through the air than any other quarterback in the league. And his numbers on them aren't great. You know, it's not Patrick Mahomes throwing that deep ball, which he's so good at. Brady, his strength, at this point in his career, and he's not as young as he used to be. None of us are. I don't know why I ever say that sentence. but his strength is not a deep ball, and it wasn't in New England. And I think one thing that hasn't been established in the same way in Tampa Bay is that easy outlet out of the backfield. Mm. Bill Belichick always made sure he had those easy options out of the backfield, and he relied on them a lot. Mm. We talked about Gronkowski. We talked about Wes Welker. We talked about whoever else was his beau de jour, I guess, whichever receiver was his favorite at that time. But in the end, there was always a reliance on screenplays and quick passes underneath. And Tom was brilliant at that.
Yep.
I think when we talk about what I was saying earlier about Patrick Mahomes having that sense of the field, being able to know where his receivers are without looking at them, it feels like Tom has lost some of that, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. And sure, some of that is new environment, different teammates. But I think part of it is not having that to build it all on. There's not like the easy option to make that quick decision to. It's not that he can't throw the ball downfield. He's done it enough this season. He did it especially in the second half here, really.
Yeah.
But should that be, I don't know, plan A, B, and C? And look, I adore Bruce Arians. It's no secret on this podcast that the Cardinals are my team. Bruce Arians brought us a lot of fun and, you know, pretty close to really to winning something. Mm. But I do think he's sometimes predictable as a coach. And I think that the direction in which he's predictable is maybe not the ideal match with Tom Brady. And that's kind of always been my reservation with Brady going to Tampa Bay, to be honest.
I think it's really, really well defined. And it's will roll on, of course, because when you have a quarterback as celebrated as Brady, there are none more so in that respect, going into a situation where he's going to want to call a fair amount of the shots as well. It's been interesting noting how Arians has dealt with criticism in press conferences and not been afraid to criticize Brady and call him out. But at the same time, the self-deprecation from Brady and from this team, I think it's a positive thing, right? And the other point, I guess, about Tampa Bay's chances is, look at how many Super Bowl teams, there are, I guess, one or two exceptions to this rule, but how many Super Bowl teams the last 15, 20 years, where they were around week 12 of the season, right? And how many times have we looked back on America's game and it's, you know, misfiring and not quite there. And they are going to have, barring something extraordinary happening, more than enough to get, as I say, within, you know, a couple of games of the Super Bowl. And going back to one of your first points, you get a back against Brady in that situation. They've got plenty of time to sort this out.
And I mean, look, in this year of all years, after some of the other mayhem we saw this week and are still seeing, who knows what any team's shape is going to be going into the Super Bowl. I mean, there are disaster scenarios out there, like a team getting to the Super Bowl and someone getting sick before the game, contracting COVID. I think this season is as unpredictable as any. And it would certainly be quite a chapter, wouldn't it, to add to that Tom Brady narrative. If he was to win a Super Bowl from here. You know, that said, in amongst all the unpredictability, the one thing that you can most predictably rely on is a bye week. So winning a conference helps. And the Chiefs are in a lot better position to get that than Tampa Bay are.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to your beloved Arizona Cardinals and something we can be sure of, which is that the Patriots never cease to surprise us just when they've been written off. So the heartbreaking loss. Nikki, heartbreaking loss. I'm kicking myself really because I looked at this game and I was very big on it all week as a Cardinals win. Ollie, our producer, was saying it's got trap game written all over it and eased into the lead. And I thought, here we go. And then just threw the game away, Arizona. And Kyler Murray looked, and I know that the TV crews were emphasizing and illuminating this very much, but didn't look comfortable, looked frustrated a lot of the time. Did this game come down to you to the play just before the half when the Patriots goal line stand, realistically in 2020 hindsight, it's always easy to look back. If the Carter has taken that chip shot field goal and gone in with an extended lead at the half, they probably would have put this one to bed.
I think you could pick a whole bunch of inflection points in this game, to be honest with you. You know, the Cardinals massively outgained the Patriots in terms of yardage. But not punching the ball in when you're down on the goal line. The Patriots, of course, did make a fourth down goal line. It's a very clumsy way of saying it. They scored on a fourth and goal. The Cardinals had two, I think, fairly critical penalties against Isaiah Simmons. He's a rookie, and some of these are mistakes that happen, but one of them is on the final drive hitting Cam Newton out of bounds, which he did do, adds yardage onto the penalty, helps New England kick that game-winning field goal. He had another one in the first half that led up to the Patriots getting that fourth down score. There was just lots and lots of these inflection points in the game, I think, where the Cardinals could have won it and didn't, basically. The easiest to point out, frankly, is just Zane Gonzalez kick a field goal at the end of the game and probably nothing else happens in this game at that point. So I think the Cardinals lost it rather than, the Patriots still had to win it, but I think the Cardinals threw it away from a position of being the better team. I think you can look at individual plays like that and make all sorts of conclusions from them. I think you can also ask some bigger questions like, Kyler Murray, is he still trying to, you know, I don't know if this is coaching or him, but there were times when there were open passes underneath and he wasn't taking them. He was trying to force the ball further. Was he less confident in some of those other receivers without Larry Fitzgerald there? And also, was there some effort to protect him going on? Because in the first half, he really didn't run a lot. And I think that is always such a major part of his threat. Now, I think the Patriots defended it well. They didn't come upfield too much. They sat and waited for him. But still, he was able to do things in the second half that he didn't in the first, which suggests there was a bit of caution there as well.
It's interesting because they talk of his shoulder being banged up going into the game, and when he was throwing it out left, right and centre, we thought, well, okay, that's okay. But as you say, they're very protective of him in that respect. So I wonder if that, given how dual threat quarterbacks have carved up the Patriots all season long, right? It did seem to be interesting. Mm-hmm. Taking yesterday's game, or not overly focusing on it, how have you felt about Kyler's season? Because to the most part, he seems to have progressed and moved on. Has he, to your mind, moved on enough year on year?
I think that's a complicated question, to be honest, Nat. Is he suddenly playing at an MVP level, like some people were sort of ready to predict for him? No. And is that a ridiculous bar to set for a second-year quarterback? Yes. That's not the bar that we should be judging everyone by, is can they be the next Patrick Mahomes? Because then we would have 31 insufficient quarterbacks in the league, frankly. He's improved. There's some things that still feel like he could do better. I already touched on one of those. I think he still sometimes gets too locked on to receivers downfield when there are options underneath. You saw it in this game, and I think there were times when an easy pass really could have kept some drives moving. You look at situations like that, and it's complicated without being in the play calling decisions, without being in the team meetings, to know whether or not that's down to coaching and what he's being asked to do by Cliff Kingsbury and the staff, or whether or not that's down to him getting too locked on still and not being a quarterback who, in that Patrick Mahomes we were talking about earlier, is just totally aware of everything that's happening around him and can feel things out. But again, I think there's a bar that gets set that's a bit unrealistically high. Mm. And it's easy to see how, because he has such explosive talent and he does things that are ridiculous. Like 2 weeks ago, when we're talking about the Hail Mary pass to DeAndre Hopkins. But you'd like to believe there's still more to his ceiling. Put it that way. You'd like to believe this isn't the end of his development. So could it be more? Hopefully in the future, yes.
I think as well, with the, you know, mentioned Mahomes rightly, and that's the bar that everybody is aspiring to reach, whether that, as he says, is ever going to be possible for anyone else. But Lamar, I guess, as well, with that sophomore season, and that's what a lot of people...
How much has he regressed? How much has Lamar Jackson?
Precisely. So I think it is really, really difficult to live up to those unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, and I think honestly, like, if you were looking for a quarterback, certainly physically, if you're looking for a quarterback who is like Kyler Murray, really it's Russell Wilson. Mm. And Russell Wilson has been pretty brilliant throughout his career, but I would argue he's just got better and better and better. So you don't have to go from year one to being the best player in the league to go on to have an extraordinary career. You can keep getting better in increments. Mm.
And that brings us nicely to Cam Newton, because, of course, he had early success in his time in Carolina and that extraordinary season, which he's never really lived up to since. And a microcosm going into this year was 2 weeks into the season. He was the Patriots' savior. It was the perfect marriage. Everything was tickety-boo. But COVID hit for sure. And I think that he just hasn't been the same player since he's been back from that bout with COVID. But another difficult day for him, that despite the win and despite the occasional play where dynamically he kept drives alive, and played a part. But ultimately, it was another lackluster performance for him. And really startling, quite telling pictures at the end of the game when he was one of the Patriots' coaching team was around him, and he just looked devastated and angry, and not with them, not with the situation. They just won the game, right? But clearly with himself, he knows he's not playing well. So it begs the question, how much longer are the Patriots, who are still unbelievably in the playoff mix, right? How much longer are they going to give Cam this season? How much longer are they going to give Cam beyond this season, do you think?
I think it's his this season. I think you're too far in this season to make a change. His performance has certainly come down from a couple of exciting sort of moments at the start of the season. His passing accuracy has been a bit all over the place for me.
But he passed well against Houston, though. I mean, I know yeah, ultimately, you know, that got overlooked a bit, but he had, you know, over 350, I think, and no picks, and was like the Seattle game where he was really, really strong with his arm. We see flashes of it, bursts of it, but I guess that's the point, right? It is wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, and I think that in the end, definitely worse starting quarterbacks in this league. And those starting quarterbacks probably in maybe all cases aren't making $1 million this year, which sounds like a lot to you or me, but doesn't sound like a lot for an NFL starting quarterback. He's a very cheap option this season, and the bar for him is not be as good as Tom Brady was. You know, I think it's just... I love Cam. Like, I want him to be a success. He's one of those players who I find it really hard not to root for. That's just sort of my sort of feeling about him. But I think his limitations are significant and reflected in that price tag. I think he's a very good quarterback for $1 million.
And where they go next is going to be interesting, because don't forget that before the Cam deal was done and everybody was surprised that the Patriots hadn't made a play for a quarterback, all the word came out of Foxborough is, oh, they buy into Stidham. They like Stidham, and he's had another year watching, developing, learning. So maybe that is, you know, that is their plan. For $1 million, you say in NFL terms, it's worth the roll of the dice, given they knew this season realistically wasn't going to be anything serious.
Yeah, and perhaps before the end of the season, if the playoffs really are out of the question, you see a change. I don't know. I mean, first of all, the playoffs aren't out yet, and it's tough in the AFC. It is a really tough conference, more so than the NFC, I would say, to get in. But I don't know. It's a bit like the Tom Brady conversation, isn't it? As long as Bill Belichick's alive and has a team,
anything's
it's a part
possible.
Of me that expects something, right?
The Raiders with that extraordinary defeat against Atlanta, which, I mean, absolutely shellacked against the Falcons, which again, another one we should have seen coming. So they dropped to 6-5. The Ravens, and we're recording this on Monday, of course, but the Ravens, if this game even goes ahead on Tuesday, significant injuries could conceivably be 6-5 as well. The Patriots are 5-6. So, I mean, they are, and if the playoffs get extended, Nikki, then, you know, they might find themselves expanded, I should say. They might find themselves in the mix. The
we
Dolphins,
can have that Belichick Brady Super Bowl yet.
I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. I'm still believing. Let's talk Sunday Night Football next. And you mentioned Cam better than some quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks in the league. I'm pretty sure you'd throw Mitch Trubisky in that mix. Bless him, Mitch Trubisky, much maligned and back in for the Bears, not facilitating any kind of change at all. The woeful Bears slump continues, and it was vintage Aaron Rodgers, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be an especially unflattering comparison if you're a quarterback who's not on top of their game to be compared to Aaron Rodgers when he's like this. The Packers offense just absolutely dismantled Chicago. It's bewildering to think that the Bears were 5-1 because they were made to look pretty dreadful in this game. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers looks more and more comfortable in that Matt LaFleur offense. He's just absolutely on song at the moment. Perhaps another case for, in the Patrick Mahomes mold we were talking about before, enough continuity in the staff around Aaron Rodgers compared to so much else that's going on in the league, and certainly compared to the opposition last night, because Mitch Trubisky, is he a starting quarterback? He was at the start of the season. Now he is because Nick Foles is injured. But when Green Bay play like that, there's not going to be many teams that can hang with them, and certainly not Chicago.
But yeah, particularly against that defense as well. But the reason they had that 5-0 record at the start of the season, 5-1, was obviously the defense, right? It's one of the most lopsided teams in the league. And Rodgers, I mean, on the first drive, they just tore them apart. And little detail here, or at least, again, I think overlooked detail, and everybody overreacting a few weeks back on the Packers, and we're talking about, and hey, look, we talked about it on this show, whether the decision in the draft is going to come back to haunt them. And the vindication that the organization seemingly has with the young core receivers that they feel will step up, and it's a long old season, and probably in this case this year even longer than usual, right? Lazard gets a score last night. Valdes-Scantling has been erratic and obviously dropping a fair few balls, but he's clearly got talent. Adams is playing absolutely lights out. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out if those three get in lockstep roughly at the same time, and this is, and the offensive line that is there protecting one of the best lines in the business, I think it is, this is a formidable offense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I think for Green Bay, it's like anyone, it's staying healthy at this point. You didn't even mention Aaron Jones in that offense as well, right? Because yes, he's got all sorts of options to throw the ball to, but it's not easy as a defense to prepare for all that, knowing that you've also got a genuinely top tier running game to deal with as well. The Packers have everything in place to carry this all the way through to the Super Bowl. Now, we've been talking about some longer shot possibilities, but if you're looking at favorites in the NFC, I don't know who you look at before Green Bay right now. I don't see a team that I feel more confident in. And that is a statement about Aaron Rodgers, because I think even a year ago, there was starting to be this question with Aaron Rodgers about, yes, he's obviously a very, very good quarterback, but why hasn't it come together for him in the same way as it did, for instance, for Tom Brady? Given that Tom Brady will go out and give interviews where he says, oh, Aaron Rodgers is the most naturally talented quarterback. And I think this season, it just feels like it's come together. It feels like it's come together, and maybe having a rookie behind you that's scaring you is part of that as well.
Yeah, maybe that will prove to be the master stroke that the front office thought it might be. I mean, you make a very solid argument here. I mean, the Saints, clearly it's so much depends
Saints,
on,
yeah, Saints
on
are
Breeze's fitness,
in
right?
The driving
what,
seat, but
what it's going to be like when he comes back. And they are 9-2, just to go through the seedings in the NFC at the time of recording this, which is Monday, of course. The Hawks playing tonight, and you assume they're going to get the win against Philly, but they're on 7-3 at the moment. The Pack, number 2 seed, 8-3. The Giants, still the top 4 seed. They are currently in control of the NFC East with a 4-7 record. The Rams, we'll talk about them in a minute. Maddening again. The Rams, just when you think you worked them out, right? They fall to 7-4 now with that defeat. And the Bucks in the playoff picture, irrespective of the defeat, 7-5. Your Cards just knocking on the door. They're 6-5. And then there's a drop off to the Bears, 5-6. The Bikes as well. The 49ers.
My Cards are walking away from the door, unfortunately. They're edging backwards away. They've come to visit, but they're sort of hoping you're not in so they can just go home and take a nap. So they're like, oh, just have a knock and then.
I tried.
Exactly.
Let's talk Rams. I want to get into that. Because that was, again, a game that, if we look at the same principle with the Cards, they would have felt that they threw it away. The Rams might well look at that as well, in the same way, I should say, because yes, the 49ers had players back and they played a very, very smart game, and Richard Sherman celebrating Robert Saleh afterwards as well and saying he's a head coach in waiting and really heaping praise on him. And they played Goff well. And we've seen this before. We saw Flores do this too, right? And confuse Goff and get in his head. But taking all that aside, it was from week on week, we thought, we know these Rams now, they're a serious contender. We can mark them up, lock them in for the playoffs in a deep run. And they put in a performance like this. Help me understand it, Nikki. Why are they the most inconsistent team in the league right now?
I'm sorry to be predictable. I feel like we're doing a lot of quarterback talk this week, but it does come back to Jared Goff. Mm. The defense held up its end of the bargain, in particular. Aaron Donald. I think it's one of those games that reminds you why you don't get defensive players actually winning the league MVP award, because I felt like Aaron Donald was a one-man show in this game, and it's still not going to win you a game, and that's the difference. A quarterback gets to win you the game if he's on a tear, and a defensive linemen, no matter how great they are, can't do that for you. Mm. But I mean, it's not just me saying it. When you've got your own head coach sort of coming out after the game, calling out Jared Goff, I think there is this sort of fear with him. He's got all the tools. He's not one of those quarterbacks you look at and sort of question something about him physically or anything like that. But from this quarterback who, in year one, as we talked about so much, was getting all this help at the line of scrimmage, where's the evolution been? Where's the sort of next step been to sort of feeling confident in these games? San Francisco have a great secondary. San Francisco have a lot to recommend about them for a team that's lost games this season, especially with, on the other side of the ball, Deebo Samuel coming back as well. But I just don't think Jared Goff, it's like the opposite of one of these quarterbacks, like Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady or Russell Wilson, however. You don't trust him to make decisions. I think it's not in the Mitch Trubisky category where you don't trust him to make decisions or to throw the ball well. Trubisky, it's like, where's the ball going to go? But I just don't trust Jared Goff to make decisions. And I think that's kind of pretty damning, actually, at this point of his career. He's had plenty of talent around him in that offense. He's had a head coach who certainly was celebrated as something special. And I don't see it. I don't see the development in that decision-making that you'd want to see at this point.
Is that the crux of it, the final point you made, that development and decision-making? Because I'd counter to that. I accept everything, and I think it's spot on. But I'd say to the Rams, and it was interesting, you mentioned McVay calling out Goff afterwards. Amongst his quotes, he said, "It's taking care of the football. Our quarterback has to take better care of the football." Those quotes you can always, I guess, look at in two ways. Well, he's right, he's fair, but then you think, well, did he need to say it then, and knowing the implications of saying that, right? And the underlying reasons why he chose to say it, if it wasn't frustration just taking over. But McVay, Goff's always been this player, Nicky. Like they paid him a heavyweight contract. What I'm saying is, what are they expecting? I don't think he was ever going to develop into this dynamic, game-changing type of player. He's always been a very competent, fluent.
I think that's the issue, isn't it? There's no question in my mind that you can win a Super Bowl with a, in quotes, game manager. Yep. We've seen teams do it. It's happened plenty of times. The problem is, to be a game manager, you have to not be someone who turns the ball over a lot. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the one requirement. If you're going to be a great quarterback who goes and wins Super Bowls, then yes, you can get away with a few bad decisions. You know, even Patrick Mahomes throws some interceptions. You can get away with that if you're going to make up for it by being brilliant a lot of the time. Mm. If you're not brilliant, then your number one job is don't turn the ball over. And I don't think Jared Goff is brilliant, and he does turn the ball over too much. So it's not a good recipe.
Okay, so where are we on the Rams? They're in the fifth seed at the moment. They're running. They've got a mixed bag, really. They've got the Cards twice, the Hawks, but also the Patriots and the Jets, right? So, Mark, although, hey, with this Rams side, you never know. Maybe that'll be the Jets' one win of the season. Mm-hmm. But not a clear...
That's enough. Again, the Patriots, if there's... Right? That Patriots defense is suffering for personnel so badly this season for a long list of reasons. But if there's a coach who I think...
Yeah.
Might be smart enough to unpick Jared Goff. Yeah, I think Bill Belichick's smart enough to unpick Jared Goff. We'll see if it happens.
So there is a chance, because two tough games against the Cards, the Hawks as well, right? I mean, there's a chance they could slip out of the playoff picture. I mean, a realistic chance.
I think there's still a lot to be decided in the NFC West. I think it seems very likely that you're going to get at least two, could still be three teams coming out of the NFC West into the playoffs. And right now, the Rams are in a better position for that second spot than the Cardinals would be. But as you just said, they go head-to-head twice. So I think a lot in particular rests on those two games.
At one point, we were all saying there are going to be four playoff teams from the NFC West. I remember having that conversation.
Well, I tell you what, the way San Francisco are playing, I think it's going to be too late. But to sort of focus on that for a second, because we've talked about the efficiencies of the Rams. The 49ers played a good game last night, and they've played some good games lately. This team is not... It didn't suddenly become... an awful team overnight. It had a rough start to the season, still got plenty of pieces on defense, one of the best secondaries probably in the whole league. And if Deebo Samuel is contributing again on offense, it's a good team. It's a competitive team that's just had, I think, circumstances against it more than anything so far this season.
Well, even more so now, right? Because they can't go back home for a while, right? Because of the Santa Clara situation, they're going to be on the road and house sitting maybe in Arizona. They're saying that's an option. Somebody suggested it, but because of the state and specifically the county restrictions, the 49ers, I mean, talk about completely up against it. If they somehow, I mean, even if they're in contention for the playoffs week 15, week 16, or wherever we end up getting to this season, maybe week 18, that's just an unbelievable job from Shanahan and his team.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still a pretty long shot because of the competitiveness and because the team's ahead of them. But the fact that the team, again, you go to this point of the season and you think, which teams are still fighting? Because there are some teams out there that you look at and think, this team has given up for the year. And in this year of all years, it almost feels reasonable. You know what? Like this year, I'm sure for the players has been an almighty slog with all the extra testing, with all the difficulties in preparation. But if nothing else, the 49ers look a very long way from that point. They're a team that's alive and kicking on a week-to-week basis, even if not with an easy route left to the playoffs.
And getting stronger as well, with the players coming back. Plus, they've got two NFC East teams to play in that run as well, in Washington and the Cowboys. So all is not lost. We've got to talk about the extraordinary Saints Broncos game. Extraordinary, and I'm sure all our listeners know the story by now, how the Broncos ended up with Kendall Hinton as their starting quarterback, who was on the practice squad as a wide receiver, having had a handful of games in college. Not a great college in Wake Forest, with respect, a great program there, not a auspicious career by any stretch of the imagination, and he's a wide receiver on the practice squad. He's starting a game against not just any team as well, but one of the best defenses in the NFL, and it, unsurprisingly, Nikki, was horrendous, but fair play to him. And I was just willing him to get a completion. I mean, he threw more picks than completions, but I was just willing something to go right for him, because it took a huge amount of guts for it from him, and respect to him, and respect to the players that were very, very clear to celebrate how gutsy he was to do that on the Saints side and beyond as well in the league, because it was the definition of an unfair fight. Should that game have gone ahead? Should that game have been pulled? And if so, should the win have been just awards to the Saints? The game should have been forfeited. What did he make of it? An extraordinary 72 hours.
I think the NFL handled an extraordinary situation. Personally, I think it was handled quite badly. Mm. I look at other sports that I cover professionally, and obviously primarily football. And football has had rules in place for months now in response to the coronavirus crisis, which are not especially sort of protective for the teams. But they say UEFA's ruling is that you have to have at least 13 players, including a goalkeeper, available for a game. Otherwise, if you can't feel that because of COVID, then at that point it's time to start postponing and rearranging. So again, it's not like you're sort of saying a team can't be pretty badly hit, but in the UEFA ruling, effectively the goalkeeper is like, well, there's one thing a team can't do without, it's a goalkeeper. I think you could make a case that the quarterback in an NFL team is probably even more important than a goalkeeper in football, which is some going. You know, this is a situation that has even played out in college football, where they introduced some rules to sort of provide for the abandonment, postponement, rearrangement of games if certain position groups were affected too hard, because of a situation with long snappers, which is a far less important position than quarterbacks.
Right.
It felt like there was a certain degree of punishment going on, because this was a result of a rules breach, in effect, because quarterbacks had met in a room where perhaps they hadn't got permission for, and with some of them being too lax about their face masks. And this was all after Jeff Driscoll then turned out to have tested positive.
Yeah, that's the chronology. So Driscoll goes down. The other three quarterbacks in the organization, the three on the main roster and the practice squad, are in a meeting together. And Drew Locke, their de facto starter, came out just before the game actually started. He put this statement out on Twitter, which I won't read word for word, but some of the highlights from that: in a controlled and socially distanced area, we let our masking slip for a limited amount of time, an honest mistake, but one I will own. I sincerely apologize. So he stood in front of it and stepped up, which I respected. And, you know, it's very human of him. We were getting into this on the radio show last night, and I'm interested in your opinion on it, Nikki, because look, they made a mistake and he's stepped up and taken responsibility for it. But Drew Locke's a player in his early mid-20s, right? And we forget how young so many of these players are and how easy it is to make, as he said, a mistake. And I appreciate the stakes are high, but this is a whole new world that we're dealing with, a whole new world that these guys are dealing with. And sometimes mistakes happen. It did seem to me, I'm with you, it did seem to me to look like some kind of point the NFL were trying to prove, but that's a very dangerous game to play, right? This is a brutal sport. Much as we love it, it is a brutal sport. Shouldn't the more sensible play from the NFL have been, they broke the rules? I mean, the Saints have lost a seventh round draft pick for this. There are other fines going on at the moment. When teams are shown to not abide by the rules, it relates to COVID, there are repercussions. Why didn't they just pull the game and award the win to New Orleans?
Yeah, I think that would have been a better way to handle it. I think that a league that has talked a lot and focused a lot on player safety in recent years should have really thought about that, because I think that Kendall Hinton, well, he took a pretty solid whack from Cameron Jordan, I think literally on his first play on the field.
Yeah.
But I think that's an easy way to get someone hurt, throwing them into an offense, saying them to play quarterback when they have not had even a day to come to terms with the playbook, with a position they haven't played since, well, early in college or in high school. He was a starter at quarterback in high school, and a very good one, by the way. And you know, look, if we want to sort of talk about the criticisms we throw at Mitchell Trubisky or anyone else, here's a good reminder of how hard it is to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. All right, this guy in high school was an elite athlete.
Yeah.
In college, yeah, he didn't go to a top program, but he still played quarterback for a while. He got switched to be a wide receiver. He got on an NFL roster. He's an elite athlete.
Yeah.
He's an elite athlete. And I mean, you look at the throws and he's not an NFL quarterback. He's not.
It's a great point. Just to emphasize just how difficult it is to play that position. And
yeah, I think it was the second interception to Janoris Jenkins in particular was a great example of, you know what? That ball is thrown a considerable distance and it's on target. It's actually where the receiver is, but it's thrown about, I don't know, half a second too slow to work against an NFL defense. And so it gets picked off because an NFL defender is going to react to that and get in front of it.
Mm.
And it's like, if you asked Joe off the street to throw that pass, they wouldn't come close to it, right? If you asked most players in the NFL to throw that pass, they still wouldn't come close to it. He's a good thrower of the football. It's just that's not good enough. You have to be something above and beyond to play quarterback in this league.
I wonder what happens to Kendall Hinton. I'd like to know where that story ends. But he should get all the credit that is coming his way for as we say, stepping up and dealing with it.
And the other thing is, it's on top of like the what you were just talking about with the forfeit. Perhaps the NFL is looking at this and saying to itself, well, a forfeit costs us with our TV audience. It costs us with our TV partners. They're losing something,
no doubt.
They're guaranteed. But the thing is, the TV product was awful because this was a not competitive game.
But watchable.
There was a sort of degree of curiosity because of Kendall Hinton.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the end, what is that? That's like a blood sport at that point. That's like, okay, here's this kid who shouldn't be doing this, who could get hurt doing this because he doesn't know what he's doing. It's not going to be a balanced game. It's not going to be something that's compelling from a sporting perspective. So I don't know. I think the NFL mishandled the situation, even if the Broncos were responsible for mishandling it first.
So where does this all go next? Because it seems that the NFL has managed to weather COVID and certainly navigate its season pretty successfully up until this weekend, right? Or technically Thanksgiving, I guess, with the postponement of the Steelers-Ravens game twice. And that is now, as we said earlier, we're recording this Monday, meant to go ahead on Tuesday, but more COVID issues on both sides there. We've had this ridiculous situation that we're seeing a player like that having to start a game and the consequence of that and the blowout there is a suggestion that there are going to be more issues again. What do we think will happen, Nikki? An extended regular season, an extended playoffs, the Super Bowl in March? What's your take on it as of, where are we, the end of November, early December?
It's still very unpredictable for me. I think the most sensible route, just from a sort of stepping back and trying to think about health as a sort of priority, I feel like leaving aside all logistics, because I understand logistics are really complicated when you start talking about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I would think that the best solution would be to build another week of leeway into the system now before the playoffs. And that way you have the scope to postpone games at least, because I think that, again, I'm not a public health expert. I'm just looking at the numbers that anyone can look at. COVID cases are increasing in the States. They're increasing in large parts of the country, areas that affect NFL teams. It seems really unlikely to me that you're not going to have this becoming a bigger and bigger problem for at least some teams in the league. And I think you have to get ahead of that one way or the other. I think that I've just suggested one route, which is building an extra week of leeway into the system. There are other routes, like you say, you could expand the playoffs. You could pause the season early. You could simply make a decision that unplayed games do not get winners and losers. They are go down as ties or some other metric for deciding how the game gets resolved. None of those are going to make people happy. I think the solution that makes the people, certainly it makes the viewing audience feel like they've had the fairest contest, which I think is really fundamental in sport, is to make sure the games get played and allow as much time as you need for that to happen, which will mean extending your season. I am again very aware of how complicated that can make things in terms of scheduling playoffs and Super Bowl, which are big logistical events. I'm not saying these things are easy to work out, but I think if the NFL, I'm saying this, I'm certain the NFL are doing a lot of logistics disaster planning right now, because it would be impossible not to. You'd be wildly naive not to be doing that at this point.
Yeah, on the Super Bowl, and if they do need to reschedule it, Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal made this point on their pod, on Simmons's pod, that it's not like any other year. It's not nearly as complex, certainly, and significant to delay the Super Bowl. It's not like there are going to be, unless something unbelievably extraordinary happens, 80,000 people at Raymond James. It's not going to be that kind of Super Bowl. A lot of media aren't going. A lot of us who go year in, year out, maybe not going to be going. For all kinds of reasons.
I'm pretty sure I'm not going. And yeah. This is the I mean, I say pretty sure. I'm really sure, because as you say, the logistics of getting there from a different country are almost impossible. And for me, that's the first one I've missed since 2008. So it is a thing that I normally am there for.
Yeah.
It's, you're right. There's going to be less to worry about. I think there's still more to worry about than you might imagine, because even if there's no fans in the stadium, you're still talking about whole hotels need to be booked for teams, training facilities, and NFL officials, security. There's still a lot of logistics that go into it. The upside, again, though, is a lot of those hotels and spaces you need to book probably aren't under overwhelming demand at the moment. So,
right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You make a great point as well about the inconsistency, I think, and the decision-making process. So both the penalties that are applied when there are transgressions, and look, I guess I realize that's difficult for the NFL to navigate, because they are feeling this for the first time as well. But people are saying, well, the Titans, why don't the Titans get the same kind of punishment as the Saints? But that is going to your point, provoke frustration amongst teams, amongst fans. And the same principle, if certain decisions are made about individual games, the course of the season, seedings, all these kind of things, playoff spots, I should say, not everybody's going to be happy with that. But that's the very nature of playing a season with COVID in the mix, is that you don't know if you're going to be that team where your quarterback goes down tomorrow. You just don't know that. This is part of it, that there shouldn't be too much frustration at how the NFL navigates it, providing, and I think you make a great point, that the product is, it's a fair fight, and certainly the Saints Broncos game wasn't, but also that it's sensibly safe, that there's enough parameters, and players are making their own decisions and officials are making their own decisions about whether they want to play with inside those parameters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to sort of highlight one thing that I've taken this from Sports Illustrated that I was reading this morning. One thing that I understand is under consideration, bubbling teams in areas for the playoffs is certainly something that they're talking about doing. So there are at least some of these things that are being planned ahead for, but it does feel to me like these last few weeks of the season are very fraught.
Okay, let's wrap up with the changes that have happened in the last week with teams, because we're starting to see teams, and you mentioned those franchises earlier that are just not at the races and seem to have given up, don't have anything to play for. Well, the Jaguars and the Lions, two teams that are done. The Jaguars have been for a while, although battling valiantly once again, actually, last night. They were with the Mike Glennon era beginning and possibly ending, at least made it a fair fight. But Dave Caldwell, their GM, gone. He's been there, 86 losses, 37 games, to do the maths there, but a fair chunk of time. And of course, presided over a team, Nikki, that got to the AFC Championship in the now legendary, I talk about the Glennon era, the Blake Bortles era. And
what now legendary Blake Bortles era. I'm not sure I've heard it described in those terms.
I feel you and I spent a lot of time talking about Blake Bortles era over the years. We were working
together. I was probably with you, I assume. I remember being at TalkSport on the night of the loss to the Patriots.
Yes, yeah, we did that game together, and I mean, we were definitely talking a lot of Bortles over that time.
Yeah.
Caldwell was there. Coughlin was there at the time as well, of course. Tom Coughlin, the former Giants head coach who had so much success in New York and was expected to revolutionize this Jaguars franchise that is dear to a lot of our hearts in the UK, of course, but is flattered to deceive in terms of any real success. And he left without much to shout about. They have now moved on from Dave Caldwell. And from what I can work out, looking at social media, looking at how Jags super fans are reacting, I think it's a universally popular decision, Nikki.
Yeah, I mean, the team, again, it's been a pretty sharp slope from AFC Championship game to being a team that can't win any games. And so I think it's natural that the person who's responsible for personnel is likely to carry the can when that sort of sharp decline happens. I think Doug Marrone probably isn't getting off with this either. I think he's just going to probably hang around until the end of the season.
Yeah.
Surprised
this hasn't been done sooner. I think that's the kind of consensus, isn't it? That Marrone in particular, I guess, when the head coaches are more prominent and more visible, so are in the firing line more. But I think that is maybe the frustration amongst Jags fans, is how are we still here with these guys? They've been given a good enough chance. And I'm a big fan and understand the value, and we see it time and time again. Those teams that typically keep the faith and are patient and don't make knee-jerk decisions, they reap the benefits of that. And you can't really criticize Shad Khan and the Jags ownership here. They've given both Marrone and Caldwell plenty of time to get it right.
Yeah, I think that seems to be Shad Khan's MO to me. He seems to be not someone who wants to make snap rush decisions, rather. He doesn't want to be someone who's like constantly burning the house down to rebuild it. I think he tries to have faith in people and has some belief perhaps in the idea that continuity is valuable in sport, which I think is an idea with plenty of merit. I think a lot of these decisions that are getting made at the moment are extra fascinating. And actually, this was, again, just to confess that these are last couple of things have been thoughts put in my head by reading Albert Breer in Sports Illustrated. But he was writing this morning about the fact that teams are talking right now about internally about the idea that, yes, this season has been very particular. And I think COVID has certainly impacted all of these decisions in all sports, the hiring, firing decisions. But that one thought that is very prominent in the minds of teams at the moment is that next season, you assume, you hope there's going to be fans back in the stands. And how are you going to, after a year in which fans have got quite used to not being in the stands, convince them that it's worth making that investment of time, of money, of everything else that goes into being a match-going fan, a game-going fan, rather, slipping my soccer language into my football reporting.
Yeah, you almost have to go football, soccer. Yeah, it's a game, really match. interesting point, isn't it?
That's what I thought. I thought it was a really fascinating thought that actually does transcend different sports, frankly, yeah. Is that I think a lot of people who were just in a habit of going to games before have now lost that habit. And you have to make them convinced it's worth their while to go back. And if your team has been on a losing cycle and it's the same faces in charge, how inspired are you going to be to spend, certainly for season tickets, thousands of dollars to go do that again?
It's a great point, because the NFL in particular, you're right, I think a lot of sports are suffering the same challenge, are facing the same challenge pre-COVID. But the NFL in particular, it was becoming, I think, increasingly a concern for certainly people I've spoken to in the game, because of the nature of the TV product and developments of things like Red Zone. But I think just generationally, this is happening across the world, right? More and more people are watching sports from home and in the comfort of their own home. It's a really, really fascinating point. So that means the Jags, and I guess they're preempting as well, having what seems to be going to be a very high draft pick. And that could mean Lawrence, that could mean Fields. We'll have to see how the last few weeks play out. But
high draft pick could be a thing that gets fans in stadiums.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, right.
Everyone loves a first round quarterback to cheer for, don't they, until it all falls off a cliff.
Trevor Lawrence comes in. I think you're going to be selling a lot of season tickets. The Lions making similar moves. Matt Patricia, who never was never comfortable there. Another Belichick lieutenant, of course, not working out as a head coach. And we all know the book on that. Very few seem to be able to replicate even close to the success they had while at Foxborough. And I guess therein lies the problem that a lot of them have learned and have been brought up in that way in their formative years as a in coaching as a coordinator or a positions coach. And that's what they try and implement without everything else around Foxborough and Belichick, right? Which is difficult without that winning mentality, the success that is there. It's not easy to replicate. Patricia, it would never seem to be a happy marriage there. And they were so abject on Thanksgiving. That was the final nail for him. It does open up a question, Nikki, I want to throw at you about the head coaching positions that we know are available now and a few that are likely to be available. So Anthony Lynn, who had another shocker in terms of game management and the calls he made, throwing away the Chargers victory once again. And given how successful Justin Herbert has been early doors in his career, it makes it even harder, I think, for them to stick with Lynn. So let's assume the Chargers are going to be on the table as well. You've got the Lions, of course, the Texans gig. I can't see how the Jets stay with Adam Gase in another weird press conference from Adam Gase. I mean, it was bizarre. And I mean, it looks completely broken and the whole thing is just dysfunctional. I mean, I'm amazed he's still in a gig, quite frankly. So the Jets will be on the table as well. Am I missing any? Are there any other?
Gosh.
The Falcons, of course. The Falcons.
Yeah.
So out of those, so Atlanta, Detroit, Jacksonville, we think will be open. The Chargers, which looks like the most appealing landing spot for you? If you were Robert Saleh or a hotshot college coach that wants a gig in the NFL, what do you think?
Oh, the Chargers, definitely. Mm. Justin Herbert. I think the Chargers actually got a really pretty talented roster. And they're one of those teams that sometimes when I look at their record, it surprises me because I think, hang on, they've played some okay games along the way. They haven't been uniformly awful. I mean, having said that, you know, you're asking it for me, not for some actual coach. I don't know, Jacksonville could be a nice place to go and live for a little while.
Well, exactly.
Maybe not right now, actually, with COVID spread. But yeah, Jacksonville could be pleasant.
You can look at the five-year plan, or maybe you get a 10-year deal like Gruden, and you can look at it that way. So I'd definitely be looking at Vegas, but I don't think that gig's coming up. The make a good point, actually, about the Chargers. And let's just go back to Anthony Lynn and end on that. And some of the play calls that he was making, because this is the thing, I think, that drives fans do lally, right? So towards the end of that game, as the clock was winding down, calling a run play in particular, right? So this is clock management 101, right? When you are trying to preserve as much time as you can, do not call a running play in that situation. It's exactly what he did. And this is the thing that, and he's understandably and predictably been vilified for that, even, you know, the comms, let alone everybody on social media blowing up about it. But Nikki, you look at that and it is hard to justify. You understand we all make mistakes, but we all, you know, there are kind of blips and things that you like Brady a few weeks back, right? When he just forgot which down it was. I think that was overstated because just in the moment you can understand that mistake happening. But when you are consciously calling a play to that degree, he must have been aware of the shortcomings of that call.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, isn't it? How exactly the coaching staff functions. Like if there is someone whose job it is specifically to be reminding him in that moment, hey, like this is the down distance. Head coaches have a lot to think about. I think there should be no doubting that. And these decisions, I appreciate that watching on TV, sometimes it can feel like the time between plays is a lot. I think it isn't when you're down there on an NFL sideline and you've got
and
to
the game's on the line,
that.
Right?
And yeah. But I mean, all successful NFL coaches manage it. So if you're not managing it, whether it's just your fault or your fault as head coach for not having the right people there, making sure you know the situation, it's still on you in the end.
It's sad because we love him from Hard Knocks. He's one of those players. It often is the way, right? You see certain head coaches on Hard Knocks that we all fall in love with and think they're great, but so it makes it even harder when you say, I think their time has come, but I think Anthony Lynn's time has come with the Chargers. That seems to be the consensus opinion. So they're going to be some interesting head coaching decisions for teams to make in the off season, and some like Detroit getting ahead of it. When you can understand, or ahead of the game, you can understand why they're doing that. And I guess that is counterintuitive to a lot of NFL fans, because that isn't often the way, right? You dance with the one that brung you, as they say, for most of the season, for the whole season, and then make the changes on Black Monday. But that seems to be changing up. More and more teams now seem to be putting the trigger during the season. I wonder if that is a trend that is going to continue. Nikki, we're out of time. It's great, always great to catch up. I'm glad we could reminisce on not just Miami, but also the Blake Bortles era. I'm glad Bortles we got time. Game. Blake Bortles was one of the Denver...
The era, as he described it.
One of the Denver quarterbacks who couldn't play on... Could it be Blake's moment for the comeback? But he couldn't play against you.
We didn't even touch on the most sort of... I don't know if it's the most crazy, because there's a lot of crazy elements in that story. Denver initially, before turning to Kendall Hinton, actually did sort of inquire about having one of their assistant coaches, whose name temporarily escapes me, one of their assistant coaches who had played, like 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah,
played
he's quarterback, like 28, 29, isn't he? Yeah.
Because Stefan and play, because at least he knew the playbook.
Right.
Which is, I mean, what a situation. What an absolutely crazy situation. The NFL didn't allow that, because there are, in fact, some rules in place to stop coaches easily transitioning to become players, because in a more normal era, they didn't want teams secretly hiding, players who hadn't quite made their roster on the coaching staff as assistants.
As assistants, interesting.
So they could do exactly that. So there are rules in place to stop that from happening. Otherwise, we would have had an assistant coach stepping in at quarterback this weekend.
Oh, that would have been an amazing story. Maybe splitting downs with Kendall Hinton would have been. That would have just underlined the movie. They've got to make a movie of this. Surely Hinton. I'm sure that story won't end here. Nikki, great to catch up with you. Always an absolute pleasure. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, check out your other work as well. Where should they head?
Just Nikki Bandini, all one word. It's Nikki with a CKY on Twitter.
Lovely stuff. Good to see you. Come and see you soon.
Anytime.
Lovely stuff from Nikki. She'll be back very, very soon. We'll be back with Will Gav on Friday's show, our preview show, and producer Ollie and I back with the Edge Rush show Saturday. So set your podcatchers for those. At the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Shouts going out to Tom, to Marley, to Andy for all their work on our social channels. Lots of extra content, bonus content, video from the show as well. We push that out across those. So if you haven't already, go give us a follow. And big shout out to all of you who are leaving really nice reviews for us. Appreciate that on all the different podcatchers out there. Massively appreciate it. I know producer Ollie particularly enjoys reading reviews that reference him. So make sure you drop one or two references about Ollie. Tell him that sent you. I think that's how it works, right? We appreciate it, though, for taking time to do that. So thanks for that. Thanks for getting involved with us on social as well at the NC Show, as I say. We're back with Will Gav Friday. We'll see you then. Bye for now.